till we run out of time.
All right.
La la la.
Test.
La la la. Are we recording this? I hope not. We are. Oh, hello. I didn't see you there. Cool. So this is ASP.NET part two, the deeper dive. I'm Scott Hanselman. This is Scott Hunter. We are the Scots. And as Scott Hunter said, we have a whole pile of stuff to show you, so we're just going to basically go until we run out of time. He's literally got demo. So let's look at our extensive slide deck, shall we? First, make sure that you sign up for the Azure Tour Stockholm. Set your calendars. 18th of November, there's your URL to take a photograph of. Sorry. You know, I promised her I'd do a photograph opportunity. And then sign up because the tickets are going fast. Okay, that's slide number two. Slide number three, a reminder of what we're doing. RTM. We saw this before. OSS. Excellent. Very nice. One more slide. And you know about DNVM, you know about DNX, and you know about DNU because you learned about those things in the intro. And I think that's all the slides.
Yeah, and we're going to change all that after we're...
All right, no more slides. And we'll probably change all of these things in the future anyway, so...
It's the way we roll.
We're only on beta 8 anyway.
Come and teach you something and change it the next week.
So that was everything, and those are all my icons. The really important
those
ones.
Those are nice big icons, at least.
Yeah, I like to keep my desktop just like that. Just really big. All right, let's switch over to Scott Hunter's machine. Excellent.
Cool.
Nicely done. And what do we got first, sir?
So let's build an ASP.NET app object project here.
Okay, this will be an empty project.
This is an empty project.
Okay.
And we want to talk about dependency injection and how dependency injection is built in to ASP.NET 5 from the ground up. And we're going to show empty project first, and then we'll go into a full project and show some of the stuff inside of there, including actually doing dependency injection directly into a Razor file.
Where did you get that shirt?
This is from the Scott Goo closet.
The Scott Goo collection.
Yeah, there's actually a Scott Goo closet at Microsoft where Scott has a new shirt. He actually has a couple for, you know, multiple for the same day.
It's a uniform. It's a uniform.
So I went and borrowed a Scott Goo shirt.
Excellent.
So let's just add a constructor here.
So you're in the startup class. This is
your empty project here. So if we look, let me minimize this down here because we don't really need that stuff. Mm-hmm. This is your Hello World kind of application running nothing at all. So we've got a configure services where you can add things like dependency injection for MVC, MDD framework, whatnot. We've got our configure here, which actually runs the project. And you can see in this case, we just call app run. We pass it a Lambda, which in this case happens to be just a block of code that writes Hello World out to the page. Now, in our case, what I want to do is we have this object called iApplicationEnvironment.
Quick question. So we're starting with empty project. So you're in a project with nothing, right?
This is the
That's
project.
All there is. That's, okay.
This is all the code.
All right.
And we have this new thing called an iApplicationEnvironment. And think of this as the thing that if your app wants to go find out, hey, what folder am I running in? Some of that kind of stuff. What I want to do is how would I get this?
Right. And dependency injection is all about making sure that all those dependencies are centralized and not spread all over our application, that our application isn't going new this and new that, that it can access the information that it wants. So if I want to get access to my application environment, then we're going to inject it into those classes that need that information.
Right.
Ah, thank you.
So in this case, the host that boots up ASP.NET knows how to do this stuff.
I ordered takeout.
That's pretty. Where's my beer? And so you notice I just add a constructor to this thing, mm-hmm. and somebody's going to pass that in. The ASP.NET host has figured this stuff out. It's going to pass it into me.
Mm. So you didn't have to tell anyone that iApplicationEnvironment is wanted by putting it in the constructor as a parameter. That is all you need to express, I want that.
That's right. And we can use VS to help us a little bit here. I can click on this guy and tell him to make me a field for this.
Okay.
So at that point, if we run this, via dependency injection, you're going to see that...
So the host sees that you need one and passes you one.
And I've got one here.
And what is that? What does that environment consist of? If we put that into the watch window there... So that's a .NET execution environment. And then actually, if you can zoom in a smidge, you can see the application name, whether it's in debug configuration or not, the version of the framework that you're running on top of, the version of the application. So that was just injected in by the runtime.
The hostess injects that in there. So you get this stuff for free as part of ASP.NET 5. Now let's make the project a little bit more complicated. So let's stop this, and let's do file new.
Now in the past, if you wanted to do inversion of control and you want to do dependency injection and containers and things like that, you would have to bring in a third party.
A third party something in.
Thing.
And you still can, by the way. Just because we are providing a default DI implementation side of ASP.NET, it doesn't mean that you can't bring in a third party that might have more features than ours does.
Okay.
But because we're building dependency injection as a core component of how we actually run our own framework, we need to have something at the bottom, and we need to have a base.
Okay. So this is the default dependency injection, and as with all things, it's modular, and it's you can choose whatever makes you happy.
Yeah. So let's go look at our project here.
So this is a full project. This includes authentication and logging and all sorts of stuff.
I'm in that same configure services method that we saw before that was empty in that empty project. Mm-hmm. But now you see us adding services for entity framework. We add services for the identity system for logging in. You can see that we actually have some stuff we inject for Facebook login, for Microsoft account login. Mm. We add dependency injections for MVC. I can show that later where we have a controllerless controller.
Mm-hmm.
And then finally, the identity stuff requires the ability to send SMSs and emails, and so we're adding classes for those as well. So you can see our entire stack is based on dependency injection. Mm. Now, something new that we've never done before is I can go run in my view, and I can click on my home, and we can go to, like, index.cshtml, and we've actually added dependency injection here as well. Mm. So I can inject into my view objects from anywhere. So in this case, I need to go and bring in Microsoft.dnx.runtime, because that's the thing that uses that.
Mm-hmm.
And now I can do that same. I can do this inject.
Ah, and you're in a Razor view now, not in a class.
I'm in a Razor view now, and I can inject that same iApplication environment.
I see. So, like, for example, if you wanted your view to say, I'm in debug mode or I'm in release mode, that information is available to you.
Right. If I save that and I come down here.
Oh, and
now you see in my code I'm getting IntelliSense. You can take anything that you want and inject it into a view. Mm-hmm. So, for example, a great use for this that I would use is I might have my configuration. We're going to talk about configuration a little bit later on. I might build some configuration that I want to pass around in my views.
Mm-hmm.
The title of my site, et cetera, and then just inject those into my views so I can actually view them in the views.
And the thing that's most important to understand here is that neither the startup.cs nor the index.chtml is newing up an iApplication environment.
Correct.
And if you wanted to make your own implementation of iApplication environment or
whatever,
this wouldn't change. It wouldn't matter as long as the interface stays the same.
If you've been using ASP.NET for a while, you're probably used to HTML.text box and all these kinds of things that we had.
Mm-hmm.
Historically, the way we built these is we actually had a class inside of MVC that had these things statically defined.
Mm-hmm.
We're actually now dependency injecting these into the views as well. You don't see this here because it's automatically happening. But I can even do crazier things. I could come up here. Let's say I had my own HTML dot.
Mm-hmm.
I don't, but I could just make this guy HTML. So I've given him an alias of that. And now HTML dot
is an iApplication environment.
I just overrode the built-in HTML dot in MVC with my own HTML dot.
So as we said before, everything is overridable, everything is modular.
Yeah.
That's cool. Having dependency injection in the view is very convenient.
So let's show one more thing on dependency injection real quick. Let's jump to a controller here. I'll go to my home controller, and we might talk about how do you do logging and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
We have this thing called a iLogger factory.
Would that go into a constructor?
It would. Why did I do that?
Because you're a manager.
Okay, I'll let you drive. I think not. So let's go add a iLogger factory here.
So again, we're going from a controller with a default constructor to a controller with no default constructor. The system is automatically introspecting. It's automatically looking at that and seeing that, in order to make a home controller, I'm going to need an iLogger factory. Someone's going to need to set up an iLogger factory earlier and prep it so the system knows how to get one of those.
And I might do the same kind of thing here where I set, you know, under log equal to that.
Now, you don't have an under log yet, so you'll say control dot.
Let's talk about something new here, too. With Create Logger, I have a new feature.
Mm-hmm.
Typically, on a logger, you can actually say, hey, I've got a string that says what category this is.
Right.
We added a new feature in MVC5 here where I can actually give it the name of my controller.
Okay.
And so I don't have to go and specify that string. It's getting it right from my controller.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, as you were going to say before, I can come over here. I can control dot and generate a field for that.
Nice.
Boom.
Okay.
And I'm good to go. And now if I wanted to use that, I could actually come over here and go add.log. I could say log information Hanselman is in the controller.
Okay. And that's going to then show up if I'm using Azure. That'll be logged, you know, automatically.
Correct. That'll be logged into Azure automatically.
Mm-hmm. Appear to the command line, probably?
If I go back, even in Visual Studio, if I go back over here, once again, we talked yesterday about how everything has to be configured and turned on outside. It's done manually. So you can see in my configure here, I'm actually setting my default information. I want to see everything's information or below.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm saying I want it for the console, if I run it from the console, and I want it from debug, which means I can see it inside of Visual Studio, which means if I F5 this in Visual Studio.
So add debug says it'll show up in that
it shows up in our output window inside of Visual Studio.
Nice.
Unfortunately, for this demo, it's going to show up with a lot of other noise.
Because you're going to get informational logging from other aspects of the system.
Yeah.
And that's another important thing that to note is that we are using these systems ourselves. We use the Logger Factory. We, the ASP.NET framework. Where'd you put that? Oh, there it is. Look at that. And then again, that would appear at the console if you were running this hosted in the console.
And so that's how those things work. So let's talk about more the mechanics of how one of these applications works now. So we've been showing an ASP.NET application, but let's talk about a class library, and then what we'll do is we'll see what a class library is. So I'm going to take this application here, and I'm going to right-click, and I'm going to say Add New Project. And I'm going to select this class library. This is under the web node.
And it's interesting. It says class library package.
Right. And that's because everything that you do in ASP.NET 5, your ASP.NET 5 application and your class library project, I guess, are actually packages.
NuGet packages.
They're NuGet packages. So when you build this class library, out comes a NuGet. And we'll actually show that in a second.
Mm-hmm.
So let's call that class library 1. And then what we'll do is this works the same way as it always has here. I can come and add a reference. Click that.
Now, I think of this as being a class reference, and I think of that dialog as being different from adding a NuGet. In this case, it's one and the same.
It's actually one and the same. And if we actually go look at that, let's go down and look at our project.json. The act of me doing that.
Now, stay right here. This is really interesting, and we're going to talk about this a little bit later. But here under dependencies, which are that references node, EntityFramework.commands, we know, is a NuGet package. We know where that comes from. Class library 1 is a project that's in our exact same solution. But there's nothing here to tell class library 1 didn't come from NuGet. It's a scoping issue, isn't it?
To show that it's a package, we can go look at the project.json for the class library.
Mm-hmm.
Take a look at this. All the things that would actually end up in a NuGet package, my version, my description, my authors, my tags, my URL, my license URL, are all part of project.json,
mm-hmm.
which means this is building a package. We can even show that. Let me come over here, right-click first off, we should talk about a feature.
Oh,
I check
like
this
features.
Out. Let's show this. So I'm going to go here, and I'm going to say open folder in File Explorer.
All right.
So here we are looking at the app we're running. Where's the bin folder?
There is no bin folder.
That's because we run out of memory today.
Okay, so instead of picking up the source code, compiling it, putting it back on the disk as a binary, then picking up the binary and then running that.
That's a perfect. Every time we're writing all that stuff, that was one of the things that Roslyn enabled us to do to speed up our system was, the way ASP.NET works today is we actually shell out, run CSC a bunch of times, throw that output in a folder, and then we load it all back in. And so we run compilers, we save outputs, we load them back in. The heck with all that. In this case, we're actually compiling the source in memory using Roslyn and running it.
Mm-hmm.
But what if you wanted an output?
Yeah, because maybe I don't want to put my source code on my web server.
And by the way, we should actually jump up a second here. Even when I do put my output there, I'm not going to put it in the source folder because the source folder is what I'm going to check in.
Right.
You don't want to check in your bin folder or your OBJ folder. How many times have you, in old times, written scripts to kill all that stuff before you actually do stuff?
Absolutely. Often you forget to put in your git ignore or whatever.
Building a new project system will let us move these things to like this artifacts folder here. But notice, even though I have an artifacts folder,
the bin folder is still empty.
It's still empty.
Why are there folders then?
So we don't have anything. So what if I wanted something? I might actually want something. I can come back over to Visual Studio. I can right-click on my project. We have a command line tool that'll do this as well. So from command line, I could have run dnu pack,
okay,
and that would have built me that. Or I can come over to the build tab over here, and I can say produce outputs on the build.
And it's really important to make clear that by the time we are released, you can go through the entire lifecycle without ever having to go on the command line.
Correct.
We like showing the command line because it reminds advanced people what they can do, but you will never have to go there if you don't want to.
Right. I'm not really going to the command line here. So.
Right. This is doing the equivalent.
But if I, you know, I don't even need to do that, but I'm still so used to building, I just build all the time. We go back into artifacts now, under bin, class library debug, look what's there.
The artifact is a NuGet package, or as David Fowler calls that, a nupkeg.
Alon Lipton actually termed that.
Alon wants us to say that?
So
I don't want that to become a thing.
It already is a thing, sir.
I want to shush into a machine, though.
This is show this as a nupkeg.
Okay.
Let me zoom back out here. Here's my NuGet package showing my metadata right here.
Mm-hmm.
I can zoom back out.
You didn't have to go and run NuGet and do all this yourself. It's just it's the natural artifact.
Yeah,
it's no longer DLLs.
Right. So if anybody in the room's ever built a nupkeg or NuGet. Anybody's built a nupkeg, I'm going to stick with it.
I know.
You can see that with ASP.NET 5 and beyond, all you do is write a class library and it just works.
And interestingly enough, now to be clear, he's using the NuGet Package Explorer, which has not yet been updated to understand DNX. That's why it says unrecognized framework.
Correct.
But notice that this NuGet package here has two DLLs in it because he's built it for both core and full framework. So the artifact is a single NuGet package that I can then hand to you and it will work on either one.
So let's talk about that a little bit. So if we go back to my class library and look here, we got this new drop-down box at the top here. Well, first off, a couple things. Let's go to references. And notice that we have references for two nodes here, DNX 4.51 and DNX Core 5.0. So one thing that we do with ASP.NET 5 is we actually cross-compile for everything that you have listed in your references. So if I go to my project.json, you're going to see that I'm actually building for two frameworks. I've listed DNX 4.5.1 and DNX Core 50 here.
Mm-hmm.
If I only wanted to do one of these, I could actually remove one mm-hmm. and just limit myself to everything, to one framework. In our case, we're trying to get people to be able to write applications that run both on the full framework and .NET Core, and so by default, we're putting both of them in here. But that means that we've actually created a new feature to support that, and this is called Combined IntelliSense. So if I type thread dot, well, first off, let's do thread, and I probably need to bring something in here. So this is an interesting point here as well. Notice there's a use system.threading.
Okay, let's zoom in on that.
Let's move down a little bit, because we want to show that there's also...
I don't know how to use your mouse. Oh, you use one. Are you one of the people that
yes,
uses the
Yes, I am.
Little,
I don't like the trackpad.
The little eraser head?
So notice I have two options here. I can bring in system.threading, which is classic style.
Mm-hmm.
Or I could bring a package in, system.threading,
threading.thread. That is new.
This is what you actually want to do. If you want to build an application that can work both against .NET full framework mm-hmm. and .NET Core, mm-hmm. you need to bring this package in. This package brings the right requirements in to target both things. If I just use this system threading, this application would only work on .NET 4X.
Okay.
So let's add the package. And then once I do that, jump back out here.
Okay.
See if it's done its thing. It did because it changed color. Now look at this.
Uh-huh. Oh. You always do that.
Oh no, Mr. Bill. Okay. What do you think those are?
Well, that means be afraid or be careful at the roundabout. I've seen that sign before. Here, it's saying that allocate data slot is available on the full framework, but it is not available on the core framework. But I can see that thread.current thread is. So if I use this API, then it will be available to me anywhere. And it looks like nothing useful is available. Why are there such differences sometimes? Some of these things I found are mostly the same. Other ones are very, very different.
So once again, just like we're rebooting ASP.NET, .NET Core is a chance for the .NET team to reboot some parts of .NET as well. Mm-hmm. And so when they look at some of the stuff we have today, some of them might be very Win32 specific.
I see.
And when you're trying to build these things to be non-Win32 specific, you're going to go hide some of these things away
right.
and put them in different places.
That makes sense. There's threading things that are very, very Win32 specific, so those would not make sense on a Linux system.
So let's say I wanted to do something like I wanted to set the culture for this thread.
Okay.
So let's do the way that we would do that today, and then we'll see what this is going to do. So culture equals new system.globe. Localization, and we'll do culture info, and we'll just say something like en-us, which would give us this. Now let's build the application.
Ah.
Uh-oh.
Thread does not contain a definition for current culture, but on the right-hand side over here, it is actually specifically saying for core 5.0. So
right.
here you've got a compiler error that is specific to going core. And at this point, you have a decision to make. Do you keep and continue to target core, .NET Core 5, or do you figure something out?
Right.
So you're going to if-def your way to glory.
Because that's what we do.
Is that a good thing? What price your immortal soul?
Don't do that.
This is actually more common than you realize. And this is actually, you can do things in a number of different ways. In this case, he's going to do if-def for compilation. And remember, it's going to split out and it's going to compile twice. So you're going to end up with one NuGet packets. It's going to have one DLL for core and one for the full framework. And then, of course, you can hide these things with interfaces as well. So in this case here, he's baking that if-def directly into his class, but he could have an interface and then have like I file system handler, and he could have one for core and one for full framework. It's up to you how you want to abstract these things away. But we also want to show you that you see how culture info that he's typing right now is gray. That's because DNX Core 50 is not defined in the context of which he's doing right there. If he defined it, it would then switch, and the top line would be in color and the bottom line would be gray. So you context is.
Yeah, so I'll show you that works. The reason this is the way it is, where you're seeing this code being currently highlighted, is because this selector I've got up here.
Mm-hmm.
This selector lets me say which framework I'm actually trying to work for right now. So I'm actually trying to work for DNX 451.
Right.
So I can see all the things that I can do in the full framework.
Mm-hmm.
If I switch this to this,
You missed it.
I missed it. Now this is going to highlight, and you see this code running. So it's VS has got some cool features that will show you how this works.
Now, how come that's banged up?
Well, that's because I need to actually import something here.
I see, for that specific framework. Would you hop over into project.json for a second? I'm just curious about something. Ah, so see under frameworks here, DNX 451 has no extra dependencies that are specific to that framework, but DNX Core 50 has those six dependencies that are specific to that. Remember how we said in the first talk, when we followed that NuGet tree down, we saw that eventually you hit the GAC, you hit the local file system. But in .NET Core, you go all the way down and your leaf node is NuGet.
Well, the reason these are different as well is .NET 4X contains everything.
Yep.
And I've got to manually tell Core what I want it to do.
Mm-hmm.
Let's do one more console-y kind of class library thing here real quick.
Okay.
I'll do file new again. And while we're on this idea of packages, everything's a package in this new world. So let's create a class library, and I'll call it my time or my current time. And what we'll do is we'll just make a simple project here. I did not want to do that, actually. We're going to write a console app, And I'm going to call it my current time. No.
You have it under create new solution.
Yeah. Do my time. And let's just make a simple app here. Console.WriteLine.
Is this a regular old console app, a Windows console app?
No, this is an ASP.NET console app, which this concept's going to go away before we RTM.
Okay.
It'll be a regular console app. But this is a console app that, once again, is based on NuGet packages.
Gotcha.
So if I do something like datetime.now.toString, because I want to make sure it runs on core and full framework, we're here. Let's run this real quick and make sure it works. Works great. Let's go up here to my project, and I want to see that NupKeg again. So I'm going to go up here. I'm going to click Produce Output. I'm going to press Save, and we're going to build it again. And then I'm going to jump over here, and I'm going to open the file in Explorer. And let's go up here. Let's go to Artifacts, Bin, My Time, Debug. There's my NupKeg. And I want to show something else, Scott. This is pretty cool. I'm going to bring a command prompt up. I'm going to go to that folder. So here we are. We have a new, not only can we install, can we run web applications with ASP.NET or DNX, can we build class libraries that are NuGet packages, we can package our entire application up in a NupKeg. I could actually put this NupKeg up in the NuGet gallery, and we have a new command here, dnu install commands, and I'm just going to give it this NupKeg package.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I don't think you add the dot command thing at the end. It's the name of the package, not the...
I do it in the wrong order?
Oh.
Bingo.
All right. So it's bringing down the dependencies.
Well, it's doing more than that. It's going to bring the dependencies down into a package cache that we have on my machine.
Mm-hmm.
But now that this is done, let me just open another terminal for fun.
Okay, so how is that interesting? Okay, so what exactly happened there?
So have you ever seen where you install something like Yeoman or the ASP.NET Yeoman packages via NPM?
Yeah, utilities from NPM that what I would use later in my development process.
So what this means is you're now going to be able to build console applications in .NET, put them up into the NuGet gallery, and customers can basically just say dnu install name of package, and it will actually go grab the package, put it on their machine, and they can run that command from the prompt.
So how is that different from a package manager like Chocolaty or OneGet or something like that?
It's not necessarily different. It's just built in.
Mm-hmm.
Built into the system. In the future, you're going to see all the .NET commands be built this way.
I see.
So basically, the way you're going to run the .NET SDK and such, there's going to be a bunch of commands. Even the C# compiler will likely be up in NuGet this way. And when you actually install the SDK, all you're doing is installing a bunch of NuGet packages.
And because they're using Core 5, these would be on my Mac, on my Linux machine,
yeah,
and available to me to use as a piece of development tool.
Right. If I publish that up to NuGet, I could actually, and put the runtimes in it, they would work on Mac and Linux and everywhere else as well. But the idea is you can install not only applications, libraries, anything.
Mm-hmm.
I could even put a web app up there if I wanted to.
Okay.
So that's, you know, libraries and consoles and all that kind of stuff.
Well, things like CSS minification and JS lint and things like that, tools that we use in Node, those will be available written in .NET.
So let's do file new one more time. And let's...
This is like the most file new project...
Thing
I've ever done. It's like the 16th time you've said file new today.
Let's talk about tag helpers.
Okay. Now, tag helpers we saw before a little bit briefly when we compared the old and the new. We might do that again, where we saw HTML tags inside of the Visual Studio Editor that were actually purple. They were purple and boldface as a way of kind of making them look special and indicate that they are HTML, they're just regular HTML, but they're a little bit more than HTML.
For anybody that wasn't here yesterday, I'm going to pop right back over there just a sec here. In the old days, as Scott was saying, let me scroll the code here.
Okay, there's the old days. There's the new days.
Let me get right to the div there. This is what ASP.NET looks like today. And when we created Razor, the idea behind Razor was to minimize the amount less than percent, some code, percent, all the brackety stuff we were doing. We had lots of brackety stuff. We wanted to actually reduce the amount of that you had to type. And so we did this new thing where you could type at and run some C# or VB. And this is what Razor looked like. And then for MVC, we created these helpers, HTML.textbox, which would take your model and give you IntelliSense for it, and so on. And we thought this was a great leap, and it was. I think for writing code in the page, it's a pretty good leap. But we lose a lot of features here. Writing when I have to write my classes in this C# anonymous object, that's not normal.
Right. So what happens here is he's got their div column MD10, which is HTML. He says at, which marks the beginning of a switch into C#, but then is an anonymous object where he says new at class, when he's intending to make a CSS class. And then he makes magic strings tunneled inside of anonymous objects inside of C# that he wants to end up in HTML. So while Razor was very, and remains to be, very convenient way to have a nice clean separation between HTML and CSS, it didn't really solve the use case.
Yeah, we lost our HTML IntelliSense and we lost our CSS IntelliSense, especially in these anonymous objects. And so you jump over here.
This is the exact same form, unchanged.
Yes. This is the exact same source code. And comically enough, it actually almost emits the same thing. So in this case, you'll notice that everything that's bolded, that's something that's called a tag helper. And we'll drill into what a tag helper is a little bit more as we go on. But the cool thing about these things is now, when I'm over here, no IntelliSense. Over here, I'm actually in CSS or in HTML, full IntelliSense. And that was the goal.
Oh, and then I just saw B for Bootstrap, right?
Yeah, there's labels for those things. As I scroll through here, there'll be B for those. And
so let me try something here. If I understand correctly, you're saying that this part here where it says like validation for is special. So I bet that if I removed that, you see how span just changed color? This is just HTML. This is not switching to run at server. But what we're doing is we're saying when, as you're processing this HTML, as you're processing this Razor, and you see span, and it has a registered tag helper, that validation for is going to provide a little bit of information about how you want to affect the rendering of span.
So let's undo that guy.
I was initially not a fan. I thought this was a weird idea, and I thought it was a mixture of web forms and MVC. But I'm realizing that it really allows you to spend a lot more time inside of HTML. And a lot less time switching back and forth in Razor.
This idea came when Damian Edwards and I were at an Angular conference a year or so ago.
Yeah.
And we came back and we decided to go port one of our ASP.NET applications to Angular. And it required a lot of those class attributes on our HTML. Mm-hmm. And by the time our HTML dots had turned into walls of markup. And we wanted to reduce that. And so this feature came out of that. So let's do something funny like hello at date. Time. I'll show you a few of the tag helpers that we have.
So there's built-in tag helpers, and then I assume that there's the ability to write your own tag helper.
Correct.
All right.
So this is just regular markup that you might have here. If I run this,
don't you need a? That's a function.
It's going to complain.
Boss.
Yeah, I saw it.
You know what they're thinking?
They're thinking VS is not helping me enough.
Managers.
So shows the date time. Simple.
Right.
Well. In ASP.NET today, we've always had this notion of being able to cache elements. In web forms, that was a directive that you put on your page. Mm-hmm. In MVC, that was an attribute that you put on your controller.
Right.
Well, in here, we created our own tag called cache.
Now, that's not an HTML tag that I've ever seen.
It is not an HTML tag.
It's a directive that is a ASP.NET tag helper. ASP.NET's going to emit something when it sees that go by.
And notice, it has the same attributes that we've had on all the cache features we've had in ASP.NET from all time. Hey, what time do I want to expire? Do I want to be sliding? Do I want to vary by cookie, by header, by whatever?
Right.
So it's got all those features built in. Now, what's cool, if I run this again.
So you've got them. You get two of them there. I assume one is cached and one is not.
One is not.
Okay.
And if we start refreshing the page, you see one of them's cached.
Nice.
So
nice.
Very simple, cool way to do cache. Now, people in the audience might ask, well, what if I actually wanted to emit the cache tag? What if I don't want
it? Oh, like what if you were using Web Components, which is a client-side technology, and you needed a new tag called cache?
Yeah, maybe Angular's got a new tag or something. You don't want us to interfere with
you.
You
don't want a reserved word.
We didn't forget that. A little bang there.
Oh, it's important now, right?
Boom. I run the same app again.
How come it, and now it's just, now it's going to actually.
And if we view source and find that element.
Are you using IE? Sorry.
You used IE all day yesterday. I'm trying to mimic you.
No, I didn't. Yeah, you did. Where's cache? There it is right there.
There it is. Now you see that it properly emitted the actual cache tag, even though that doesn't exist.
Even though it's being ignored,
it doesn't
do
anything. And if we refresh the page again, you'll see that both of those things stay the same. There you go. No, nothing, not cached. Let's show one more thing where we have an existing tag helper inside of the project.
Yeah, this is actually a really convenient one.
I'm going to go to my shared stuff here and go to my layout page.
Right. This is kind of your master page for your application.
And let me hide some stuff here so we can really see everything here. We have another new tag that we created called environment. And the idea behind environment is I'm building, sometimes I'm a developer and I'm doing my development work, and sometimes I'm building a production version of my application. And so you notice I have environment names development here. What that means is when VDS is in debug mode, emit this markup inside of this environment tag. And below here we have environment name staging in production. When staging in production, emit something else. In this case, what I'm doing is when I'm developing, I want my non-minified source code. I want to be able to use local copies of all my libraries so I can step through them in my browser and check things out. But when I'm in production, I might want to switch and put these things. I want to use the minified version, which is hard to debug, and I might even want to go further and use a CDN.
Right. And what's cool about this is it is using the environment tag helper, and then underneath it, using another tag helper that's called link. And in this one here, he's saying link to this style sheet and go and use the CDN for the minified version of Bootstrap. But this is really cool. The link tag helper is very, very sophisticated. If it turns out that CDN is down or it's not loading fast enough or it ends up that the Bootstrap CSS doesn't actually get loaded, that fallback is going to... And what are you doing, man?
I'm just showing that if I... It's these special attributes that make it
attack
over.
Yeah, they turn purple. They turn purple.
If I turn those off.
And you see it says fallback test property. It's going to say, I'm going to check the visibility of this particular thing as the clue that maybe this CSS failed to load. And then in this case, it'll fall back to a local copy of Bootstrap. So we've got the environment tag helper and then the link tag helper nested and working together to come up with a fairly sophisticated solution in a minimal amount of code.
Right. We actually had a whole feature that we had written, our bundling and minification feature in MVC 5 that did some of this work for you, but it was C# class libraries, a bunch of stuff you had to configure at the start of your application.
Right.
Now it's just markup.
Certainly these fallback things are totally optional if one wants to do that.
Correct.
And then, also that link style sheet, the site one here with the append version, that's a really nice one too. By saying append version, you get that cache cracker.
Yes, it'll put a cache cracker on your thing, which means unless the file changes, you're going to get the same file.
And see, this is an example where in the past I might want to go into the href there and do they called them bee stings. Remember, you'd drop into a bee sting and go at something, 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 and you'd write a bunch of code.
So you might ask, how do we know if you're in development mode, staging, or production?
Environment variables?
That's correct.
What's new is old? What's old is new?
Let me just undo this.
Oh, sorry, I put it in full screen.
I saw that. So if I go back and look at my project, and I right-click on it, and go to Properties, under Debug, you will see that we actually defined this development here.
Okay. So here he's got ASP.NET ENV as development, and that's just a well-known environment variable. And what's nice about doing it like this is you might think environment variables are inconvenient, but when you go and put this in Azure, you just go to the Configure tab and add it as a name-value pair, and it just shows up.
It just shows up. We recommend, this is actually what we're recommending for the cloud now. We actually recommend that our customers go and configure all their connection strings and so on in environment variables inside of the cloud versus sticking them in web config files, which might make it into source control.
Let's hit that point one more time. This is really important because I've tried a number of different ways. I've done webconfig. I've done connectionstrings.config. We've done external connectionstring.config. We've named them weird ways, all in an attempt to prevent the checking in of that file accidentally into source control. And inevitably, we've all made this mistake, or we've put a secret, or we've put some connection string into source control. If you put those things in environment variables that are application specific, there's no way that they'll ever show up in source control. So we definitely recommend that people do that.
Yeah, this actually shows how this works. You see, when the application boots up, we actually go and create the configuration builder, and we say, hey, we're going to add config.json, which is our default file. We then take to have a config.yourenvironment. That would be...
But that's a new feature there with that dollar sign.
Yes.
What was it called? Format expansion or something?
It's a C-sharp feature.
C-sharp feature. In the old days, you would have had to say config plus environment name plus .json.
Right.
So they're scoped because of the order that they are?
The order they are. Each one in order can override the one before it. So you start with config.json. If I wrote the same element in config.development.json, It would allow me to override it. And then notice at the bottom here, we have builder.addEnvironment variables. So you can run it locally with a config file, and then you can override it with environment variables. The idea is when you publish this to Azure, that kicks in and pulls all the stuff from Azure.
So I have some default value in config.json that could be overridden by config.debug.json or config.release.json. And that, in fact, would be overridden by environment variables because of this pipeline.
Right.
And if I remember correctly, they even gave the old people, like myself, a little lovin', add any file. Because if you want to use the latest and greatest .NET framework, but you insist on using any files for everything.
I can't believe we left this in. This is something that was a joke when we first built this thing.
I love that. It's convenient. It's nice. It lets the people...
Notice that we did not add webconfig files. One of our goals was... Webconfig was this thing that... Hey, it is what it is. But we had to write transformation features and all this kind of stuff, and we don't want to do that.
Yep.
So
any files are what we're doing, man. Fox Pro and Access are next.
P-list.
Yeah, man. There's no reason for it. YAML. All right, cool.
So let's jump back and let's...
So these tag helpers, how do you make one of these?
Let's write one of these things. So let's go back over to solution. Well, first off, we should talk about how we get the ones in here that are in here today.
Okay.
You'll notice that I've got this thing called view imports. And view imports is all the stuff that we run in each of your views. So you can see this is where you put all the usings. These usings will be injected into each of your views. And we have add tag helper here, which adds the tag helpers that we built. Microsoft.ASP.NET MVC tag helpers. Those are the ones you saw there before. Now I can go to my project at any point, right click over here, and let's add a folder.
So this is removing all the yucky stuff I have to put at the top of every view.
Yeah, the idea is we don't want to have, you know, like web forms did with these huge directives at the top of every page. And a bunch of stuff in there. So let's just add tag helpers here. Just a folder.
Not a magic folder.
Nothing magic.
Okay.
And let's add a class here. And we'll call this the repeat tag helper.
And this is going to show you that this is not web forms controls again, but it's also not HTML helpers. It's something different, and I think it's better.
Yeah, the big thing I would say there is web forms controls had the ability, they had all these events.
They had a life cycle.
They had a full life cycle. A tag helper does not have any of that stuff. So let me just fix him here.
Okay, so you make a tag helper that derives from tag helper.
So let's go talk about, you know, if anybody's built a control in the room, I assume somebody's probably built a control in the room. It had piles of properties. It had the ability to even go up the chain and access this whole hierarchy of stuff. A tag helper is very basic.
I see a process and a process async and then the order. That's it.
It can't. It has no access to anything outside of its elements.
It's a kind of a forward-only thing. It comes through once, not multiple times. There's no load event. There's no life cycle of any kind.
Right. The point is, we're not making these are not web form controls. Is the way I would say that.
Right.
We don't want to do that again.
Okay.
So, what should we do here?
We would for each over the thing that's inside us, right? So we're going to repeat something.
Well, let's talk about something else. One thing is, this is a tag helper. How would I actually add it to my project? So I'm going to go back to that view imports that I had before. Mm-hmm. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to say add tag helper.
Okay.
Who in the room ever struggled with writing a control and having it actually show up in web forms?
Yeah, it's easy to write controls, but it's hard to get them to show up in the toolbox.
So in this case, I do this. And by the way, I could do this manually in a view file if I wanted to go test something. So that's the work to actually get this to show up inside.
So it's just going to scan the namespace?
Scan the namespace and find anything.
Do you need to say dot tag helpers, or does it look for the whole thing?
It's what it looks for is it looks for this extension right here.
Okay.
And finds all the things that, well, actually it looks for things that derive from tag helper.
From here down, all the way down? Because you said web application 8. And this is in a different namespace.
Yeah. It's going to basically look in my entire application because I gave it the application space. It's going to find anything that's got a directive of tag helper. And then what it's going to do is it's going to, by naming convention, it's going to say it'll be called a repeat tag.
Ah, so there's no attributes necessarily
if you don't want to.
So
if we go over here and the demo gods treat us well, and they're not treating us that well.
Do you need to compile once?
No, I need to, yeah, I do. Well, there is no compile.
Do you need a spell check?
I need to save.
Oh, you didn't save it. Ah.
ASP.NET 5, man. You just save and you're good to go.
It's true, though. You don't have to go and build all the time.
Although I find myself doing it, even though I don't need to do it anymore.
Yeah, Control-Shift-B is a hard thing to lose.
Bingo. There's now a repeat.
Okay.
Now, what's cool about that is I can come back over here, and let's say I add a property to this guy. And we'll do count. Okay. I'll save it. Let's go back over here and see if the guys in Redmond have their stuff together. Ah, they don't.
You are the boss, you know.
I know.
Do you call someone at this point?
Notice that I had to close the file and reopen the file for the intelligence.
Do you remember that stuff? And then does someone get punished?
I don't even know what to say to that.
That means yes.
But now you notice that all the properties that I have become attributes.
Mm-hmm.
You could even make a tag helper be an attribute as well. I could come over here, and if I wanted to.
Oh, so tag helpers can have tag helpers?
Target element.
Ah.
So I could say instead of making it its own tag, I could make it an element.
Or an attribute, rather.
Yes. I could say hunter repeater.
I see. So it's not count. It's hunter repeater.
And so now it's hunter repeater on any element. So I could go make a div and
any element.
Yeah. So let's.
So everyone gets count now.
Correct.
Oh.
So let's go back into our view imports and try that and see what that looks like. So let's make a.
That seems.
Notice that repeat no longer highlights.
That's disturbingly powerful. You know what I mean? It's a little concerning. That means you could do that on a div. Sorry. Oh, well, wait a second. How come you say hunter repeater and then space count?
It's an attribute on my tag helper.
It's just floating there. I thought you'd say hunter repeater equals 5.
No. Hunter repeater is just the element that tells it that it's the attribute.
I see. Yeah, that's weird.
It's kind of cool.
Cool, weird. Yeah. Okay, cool.
So this is how things like the link tag, we don't necessarily have to write a link tag helper that replaces link.
So if you wanted to take div and you didn't write a div tag helper and replace div, you just wanted to augment div,
yes.
Just give it a superpower.
Yeah.
Ah, okay. All right, you sold me.
So let's
So then when you do it, when you process the thing, what are you doing, man? Writing code.
So now all we've done is got this process here.
Right.
And all it does is takes a context and an output.
Right.
And so let's just write a little bit of code. First off, the first thing we want to do is, you know, if count is less than 0, that we don't want to do anything here. So we'll just say,
return.
We'll just say return.
All right.
And do that. What we want to do here probably is we want to we lost async. Probably what we want to do is loop over, because this is a repeat thing.
Mm-hmm.
We want to loop over for count times.
Right.
and output that output.
But you want to output the child of this
thing.
I want
to output whatever's included inside of that tag.
What's underneath it.
What's inside that tag.
Right.
And so I need to go get that context, that content.
Okay.
And I'll say, await. And I'll do context dot.
I see. So tag helper context was what was passed in, and you'll say context dot, and you'll get kids.
And I'll say, give me the child stuff async.
Get child. That makes sense.
I've now got that.
Okay.
And then all I've got to do on my output is write append and give it that content.
Because you're not modifying it or anything.
No.
You just for loop around that.
And I for loop around it.
All right, let's do it.
So, some of the things to think about here is if you look at the result of this, it's not going to return. It's returning a tag helper content.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things we don't want to do is build huge strings out of this and go waste a bunch of memory. And so there's actually a bunch of intelligence here to prevent that kind of stuff from happening. That's why it returns its own content.
Well, and again, this is all forward only, and you absolutely would have tag helpers underneath that tag helper that need to do their work as well. So you're going to have those get run, and you don't want to build up huge strings, but you don't want to have one tag helper break another.
Let me put back my...
Why don't you just get rid of cache, put a div there, and repeat that.
I want to go kill that tag helper. Kill the attribute.
I'm going to teach you hotkeys one day.
No. Okay, so let's go back up here.
Uh-huh.
Let's do repeat, count. Let's do our trick. This is something that will be gone before we...
The fact that you had to save it?
I have to reopen the file when I change the tag helper.
It's a small price to pay for a cool feature, though. Okay.
So we'll just take that.
Right.
Make that tag helper there. Let's go take this content right here.
All right.
Move it up here. And kill that. Don't need that anymore.
I do want to do this other demo before we run out of time in 4 minutes.
Bingo.
Magical.
Brand new tag helper.
That's shiny.
Cool. What do you want to show?
All right, cool. Let's give this a try. Let's switch over to my machine real quick. Sir, is that my machine? Oh, I love the fade. It's so professional. All right, so this is an ASP.NET 5 application, and there's nothing fancy going on here. As with all of our demos, it's just hello world. You know how sometimes you'll find yourself with an application you're building, and then you find a bug in a library that you're using. Maybe you're finding a problem with ASP.NET itself, and you want to fix that. Well, maybe you brought it down as a NuGet package. You know, so you go to your project.json and you say, oh shoot, we found a bug in this project in that version. But remember at the very beginning when Hunter had class library 1 and you couldn't tell that class library 1 was a project. There was no difference. It's a string and a version.
That's by design.
By design, because it looks on the disk first and then it looks in NuGet. It looks for a local class library, specifically local source code, local NuGets, global NuGets, NuGets in the cloud.
Why don't you show global.json and let's show where that lookup happens.
So how is it looking? Well, it's looking in these two locations. It's looking in an SRC folder and it's looking in a test folder. But if I have my little application here, and if you look on the right, all I have is web application 1, and I want to maybe debug or work on a fork of ASP.NET MVC, what I did is I went up here and I just cloned MVC. Now we're on beta 8, so I checked out that tag of beta 8.
So github.com, whack ASP.NET,
mm-hmm.
You found the MVC project.
Yep. And I'm actually sitting right down here, and if I go into CD MVC, I'm on beta 8.
Yeah.
Okay. So what I'm going to do is over here, oops. I am going to...
Why do you always do that?
I don't know why I always do that. I do that because you do that. I'm going to say C colon whack whack GitHub whack whack MVC whack whack SRC. And I'm going to hit save.
And
so I'm telling it where MVC is. And then we look at our project file. And you see all these different MVC references here. What I'm looking for Visual Studio to do...
Did you save the file right?
I did. I think that's the right location. Did I miss a whack? Whack. Thank you. Very helpful. So I go to my project.json. And on the right-hand side, come on.
Go find your folder on disk.
No, it's there. I know it's there.
What's the path?
It's right there.
GitHub, MVC, source.
Yeah. Works technical. Maybe if I just hit save a lot. Oh, if you push save, yeah. That'll be better. Maybe I should just fake being shoved aside.
Well, what you did is you can't do the double wax.
Actually, you absolutely have to do the double wax.
Not for forwards.
You weren't doing forwards.
You did forward slashes. Safe.
Pretty sure I saved.
I'm glad we didn't do this demo, Scott.
We should have done this demo. No, seriously. It worked before. Hang on. This is going to be an important thing that is going to always work, and you're going to go back to the people and make sure that it always works.
So why don't you switch to me?
No, seriously. It's important.
I know. Switch back to me.
Switch back to you. Listen to me. You're actually making him switch to you. All right. Switch back to him. Oh, he did already. He listens to you. Doesn't listen to me. That kind of sucks. I'm going to get that working. I don't care what you say, even if I'm up here when they've all left. Oh, you think your slashes are going to be different than my slashes? Hang on. I need to get this right for editing. So then I say slash, and you notice that all of the projects then pop into the Solution Explorer exactly as I intended them to.
Yes.
We'll fix this in post-production. So what's going on here is that the NuGet libraries that it's looking for suddenly showed up in a location that it could see. And what was supposed to happen is that the file watchers fire, and they see that, as they did on his machine, and they for some reason didn't on mine, and they start to resolve them. And it's still in the process of resolving right here, but you can see how they changed from NuGet packages. Right now they're broken, but it's going and doing a DNU restore, and we only got about a minute and a half left. But you get the idea. Now, one of the ideas that we're hoping to go with this is the ability to pick a NuGet package and sometime in the future, maybe next year, be able to say, get the source. So you're in JSON.NET, and you say get the source, and it brings it down and does this.
Another cool part of this, so we just included all the MVC source code in my project. So if I run this project, I can actually step through the MVC source code. But uh-huh. I haven't really modified my project. I don't want to wreck my project. If I want to take this stuff back out, super simple. Delete that. Save that. Come here. Mark this. Remove these references.
Oh, see, it worked. Uh-huh.
And there you go. I had all the MVC source code. I've now removed it all, and I'm running again.
Cool.
So it just shows you how easy you can put the source code in, take it out. It doesn't affect your projects or your references or anything at all.
And more specifically, the point we made at the very beginning, this idea that if this person's system is on one version and her version is on another version, they can be on the same computer and it's okay.
Right.
Private builds, not only of ASP.NET, but of the CLR, of the compiler, of the runtimes. Pretty cool stuff.
Awesome.
Cool. So that is our deeper dive into ASP.NET 5, and I think that's our last talk for us here in Stockholm, isn't it?
We are 2 minutes over as well.
And we went 2 minutes over. Thank you very, very much, and hopefully we'll see you again maybe next year. Bye.
Thanks, guys.
Ten, nine, eight, seven, six, five, four, three, two, one, zero.